This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It's great to have you with us for the Wednesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto. Personal Finance Wednesday around Valentine's Day. Should couples talk about money, and what exactly should they be talking about? Also, is the consumer confidence number that's rising higher, leading people to take on more debt? World energy markets reacting to the coronavirus as oil is up nearly 3% today. We'll cover that in our next segment. Right now, experiencing a mini mortgage refinancing boom. Lisa mentioned this. Let's get some insight. Guy Sakala is joining us. Guy is publisher of Inside Mortgage Finance, based in Bethesda, Maryland. Guy, what are we talking about here in a mortgage refinancing boom? What's going on?
Well, interest rates keep falling, and that's prompting a lot of people who already had low rates to even get lower rates and refinance. And normally, it's kind of slow in the winter months in terms of mortgage activity, but there are a lot of home buyers, homeowners who have been sensitized to watching the interest rates, and they're pulling the trigger and putting in applications now to refinance and hopefully lower their mortgage payments.
At this point, does it take significant movement in mortgage rates to really see that needle move?
Really, only about a quarter of a point. You know, through much of last year, we were probably just under 4%, 3.75% in mortgage rates. And more recently, we've seen closer to 3.5%. And that's really what has spiked the interest in refinance activity, particularly if somebody had closer to a 4% mortgage before. It may not be enough to go to 3.75, but to go to 3.5 or around there makes a big difference.
In general, as people are thinking about this, hey, mortgage rates are low, they're going lower, and they're thinking about refinancing. They have all these brokers, all these banks, all these places where they can go to refinance. In general, do the rates pretty much stay the same from organization to organization, or should people really be shopping around?
People should be shopping around. They do vary. Their rates are determined largely by mortgage security pricing or people like Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac. That being said, individual lenders do have flexibility to lower rates even more and or add in extra fees. So it definitely pays to shop and at least talk to two lenders and compare their pricing.
And how much of an interest rate drop is really worth it? Because you're going to pay some fees or points when you go to refinance. How much should people be looking at?
The easiest way to do it is to look at, if I refinance and I roll my new closing costs into the new loan amount, will my mortgage payment be significantly lower than it was before? If it's going to be down $50 or $60, it's obviously not worth it. If it's going to be $200 or $300 a month, it clearly is worth it. But that's the easiest way to calculate, is just ask someone to give you a quote with all the costs rolled into the loan amount.
Good insight. Thank you. Guy Sakala, publisher of Inside Mortgage Finance, based in Maryland. Just ahead, the latest on oil and the coronavirus. Oil today is up nearly 3%. And we want to talk about the oil prices. Is coronavirus behind this rise? Let's talk about it with Phil Flynn, senior market analyst at Price Group, also Fox Business News contributor. Phil, so what's going on with these oil prices, and is coronavirus behind it?
I think that oil is saying, Cisco, there's life beyond the coronavirus. I really do. And, you know, if you look at the coronavirus and its impact on oil prices just the last couple of weeks, you got to realize that ground zero, you know, in the financial markets from this virus really was the price of oil. You know, the price of oil fell down over 22% in a couple of weeks. There was demand destruction of a historic scale. cities were shut down, planes were shut down. But then all of a sudden, now the market's saying, well, wait a second, you know, what's going to happen next? And there's more of a sense in the market that, you know, that maybe this virus is running its course a little bit. And so there's more optimism creeping into the marketplace that perhaps, just maybe, it's time to start buying oil again.
Because keeping commerce going, it was really one of the things that was worrying, is if you have China basically being quarantined and not a lot of activity, including flights heading to China, then it's just going to be an overall economic slowdown.
Absolutely. And there's no doubt about it. I mean, even Jerome Powell today in his Fed testimony mentioned there's going to be an impact. China knows there's going to be an impact. So we know it's going to happen. You know, the biggest question is how bad it's going to be. And if you look at the price of oil the last couple of weeks, they were pricing in some really bad scenarios. Not so much how bad it had been up to that point, but how bad it might get. But now, because there's a sense that it might not be as bad as originally feared, we're getting a little bit of support after, you know, the market got obliterated. One reason we saw a little bit of hope today was the fact that OPEC came out with their monthly report, and they seem to suggest that the demand destruction because of this event would only be about 400,000 barrels a day. That's a far cry from some of the crazy numbers that were being thrown around of as high as 3 million barrels a day. This is probably a number that's more in line with reality. It may even be a little bit low, but at the same time, it's not as bad as originally feared.
How important is it to oil companies? Obviously, a lot of people invested in oil companies. How important is it to them that oil stays not only now back in the $50 range, but somewhere up around 60 or more?
I think it's really important, and I think it's really critical for the U.S. shale industry. Here's an industry that has changed the world, but it's been struggling in recent years to make profits. And I think that there are reports that despite the fact that U.S. oil production just fell below an all-time record high, there's signs that it's going to start leveling off and maybe come down a little bit. So, you know, it would really give the U.S. Shale producers a shot in the arm if we could get those prices back up, or if we can't get them up, at least some stability so they can plan their future.
We've been enjoying some really low gas prices here in Chicagoland. Obviously, rising oil probably ends up leading to a change there with prices going up at least a little bit.
It is. Everybody starts driving more. Get in the cars. Fill up the tanks. You know, gas prices, I think they've been down over 20-some days in a row. And I always hate to be the bearer of bad news, but I think the party may be coming to an end. You know, enjoy those low gas prices. Now, they're not going to go up a lot. Don't worry about that. But we are going to see prices start to creep up a little bit. There was a big fire at an ExxonMobil refinery in Louisiana. That's going to probably drive prices up all over the nation. But the fact that, you know, hey, when gas prices are low like this, people tend to drive more and the demand's going to improve. So we're also not that far away from spring, believe it or not. It's going to be here before you know it. So, you know, pretty soon we'll start getting geared up for summertime blends of gasoline. So, you know, I always start thinking about summer blends of gasoline. Pitchers and catchers reported today. That's when you start worrying about the summer blends of gasoline driving up prices. So that's in our future as well.
Yeah, just around the corner for sure. Thank you. Phil Flynn, Senior Market Analyst at Price Group. Up next, questions to ask before sharing a credit card with someone.
The best daily deal in Chicago, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Sharing a credit card with someone can lead to difficulties. Let's talk about the pros and cons. Ted Rossman, industry analyst at creditcards.com, based in New York. Ted, so we're talking about especially couples here who maybe one of them already has a credit card and they're thinking about adding one to an existing card.
Yes, that's right. There's a lot of interesting nuances here. We talked last week about our financial infidelity survey and just how many people are hiding credit card accounts and other financial information. This is the other side of that, and this is hopefully the good side of working together, sharing information. There are pros and cons. I mean, definitely a pro is working together, streamlining things. Cons, though, are maybe giving up some of the privacy and control. So before you go in on a joint credit card with somebody, you do need to think about your habits, you know, racking up debt, paying on time, being on the same page about your spending and being okay with giving up some of that control.
So what do you do if you decide, hey, I kind of like this person, I'm willing to share? What's maybe the first question you have to ask before you actually go through with this?
You definitely need to figure out spending parameters and make sure that you know how much is okay to spend without checking with the other person and how much you need to communicate on. I also think you should consider the credit score implications, because even when you go in on a card with somebody, typically one person is the account holder and the other one is the authorized user. Only Bank of America and Wells Fargo allow truly joint credit card accounts. And I think that surprises a lot of people. It factors into that controversy a few months back with Apple Card, supposedly giving lower credit limits to women. And part of what the company says happened there was that the women in question didn't have a lot of credit in their own name, and they were not viewed as credit worthy. So it is important to keep some credit in your own name.
And I guess you have to find out about the credit history, right? That's, I'm sure, a very fun conversation.
That's a big one about merging finances with somebody. And even if you want this yours, mine, and ours school of financial management, which I think is increasingly popular, the fact is that you are intertwined with this other person, whether you like it or not. So whether you're, you know, applying for a mortgage or a car loan or a credit card, you need to know the other person's credit score, their financial history. It really is one of the most important numbers in our financial lives.
If you share a credit card, who gets to use the rewards?
Yeah, you definitely want to communicate on that, too. You don't want somebody squirreling them away and using them for their own purposes. I mean, ideally, you work together on a great trip or cash back that's going to help your budget. But, yeah, that's something we need to talk about within couples, with friends, too. I mean, sometimes people will pick up the dinner check to get all the rewards. A, hopefully everybody pays them back, and B, you know, hopefully there's no hurt feelings about the missing points.
Yeah, thanks. Good advice. Ted Rossman, an industry analyst at creditcards.com. Still ahead, Personal Finance Wednesday, finding out if you and your partner are financially compatible.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. With Valentine's Day just around the corner, we'll discuss finding a financial match in Personal Finance Wednesday. American households now hold a record amount of debt, a total of $14 trillion. Funding for a study on a long-term solution to wave damage and erosion along the Chicago shoreline is pushed back for another year. The presidential campaign heads to South Carolina following a narrow victory by Bernie Sanders in New Hampshire. On Wall Street, the Dow up 192 points. The NASDAQ is up 69, and the S&P is up 15. Oil today up a little more than 2.5%. Clouds throughout much of Chicagoland as snow heads our way. It begins later this afternoon. Some of the far southwest suburbs already seeing this system moving in. We're at a temperature right now of 35 degrees. Tomorrow and Friday, just in the teens. The Noon Business Hour is presented by Republic Bank of Chicago. Stocks are trading higher today. Let's talk about what's moving the markets. Gary Kaltbaum is joining us, president of Kaltbaum Capital Management, also a Fox News business contributor based in Orlando. Gary, what do you make of what you're seeing on Wall Street today?
Persistent and relentless, simple as that. Pullbacks have lasted a day or two. The technology arena is going gangbusters. The worst thing I can say is things are stretched, extended, frothy, overbought, and need to pull back. But when you think you're going to, they keep rallying them up. So we're in one of those outlier moments. I don't know how long it lasts, but it's fun.
So how do you invest in that environment then? Because as you say, there's going to be a pullback at some point.
That's a great question. It's a tough call. We're past most of earnings season. And, you know, I will tell you that I bought a bunch of mega cap tech stocks in November. I sold a couple this week with gains that usually go for these type of stocks for 2 years. And I did it in 3 months. And they're even going higher now. So it's a very tough call here. I just think if you haven't been in, you get a little bit more patient right here because the NASDAQ kind of looks like the Eiffel Tower right now as far as price is concerned.
And this is clearly where, you know, our nature, our greedy nature comes into play, because you may have a stock that's doing pretty well. You've made a little bit of money. You could get out now, but who knows how much higher it's going to go.
Yeah, the fear of missing out, they call it. Again, it's just a matter of, I call it the sleep indicator. If you can't sleep at night, don't get in. The good news is the action's still pretty darn good. The action's forgiving. So I've seen a couple of names like Facebook react poorly to earnings, but hardly go down. And the good reactions like Shopify today is up $60. As they beat the heck out of numbers. So, again, we're in a sweet spot here, and for who knows, it can last another year for all we know. But I suspect as it gets a little bit more frothy, we'll get some pulling in and a better opportunity. I just don't know when.
Seems like coronavirus fears have kind of crested. Is that maybe causing a little bit of calm and maybe some of the rise today?
Well, yeah, crested, but I will tell you, areas like cruise lines and travel, airlines and some China names all got hit, and they're bouncing. Oh, gaming also, they're bouncing up a little bit, but I think they're still in the crosshairs. Coming to the phone, I was reading another 39 people on a cruise ship in Japan contracted it. So if we keep hearing more of that, that's not good news for those areas. And again, it's all about if it spreads. And the good news is 99% of it right now is mainland China, but
yeah,
definitely does have an effect.
Carnival Cruise Lines, you mentioned travel. Carnival Cruise Lines is basically saying, hey, we don't know exactly what's going to happen with this yet.
Yeah, and they're knocking off a good 10 to 15% of earnings already. And they're saying it could get worse depending on how bad it gets. And it's just all of them, you know, safety first, everything else second, and they have no choice. So you have the airlines and cruise lines getting out of there for now. And again, we don't know how long it takes. They're trying to find other routes where they can make up for the loss, but that's kind of tough to come by. I'm not investing in these areas myself right now, but I'm certainly watching them closely.
And is that because the expectation is they'll rebound? Maybe they'll struggle for a little while, but people still love their cruises?
Look, eventually it'll come back. It's just a matter of we're in uncertain times right now. The amount of people that have died at this point is worse than SARS going back in the early 2000s. And again, you err on the side of caution when you travel, and you err on the side of caution when you are the ones that take people to travel.
Let's talk about WhatsApp, a pretty significant milestone, 2 billion users.
Nice purchase. Look, these apps are just going gangbusters, whether it's Snapchat. These things are here to stay. And I will tell you, my sons are big on WhatsApp. I'm not, but everybody I know is on it. And communication is the way to go, and the ease of communication, and it's going to continue. And I suspect we'll hear about more applications going forward.
Now, I know we've talked about Snap over the years and how tough it is to make money. Is that maybe the case here with WhatsApp as well? I mean, is this actually helping Facebook's bottom line, or are they just trying to figure out what they're going to do with the data from 2 billion users?
You have to, you know, Facebook makes a ton of their money off of marketing. When you have 2 billion users, you have 2 billion users that you can market to and send ads to, and that's the name of the game. Believe me, I am not worried about it, whether WhatsApp by itself loses or makes money. The overall platform is kicking butt.
Yeah, pretty amazing stuff to see how it's grown. Thank you, Gary Kaltbaum. He's president of Kaltbaum Capital Management. You can find him online at GaryK.com. Up next, Personal Finance Wednesday. Warning signs that a couple may not be financially compatible. Something to think about around Valentine's Day.
Loaning useful information each weekday. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday on the Noon Business Hour with Valentine's Day coming up Friday. Let's talk about the money factor in matchmaking. We welcome Craig Bolanos, founding partner and chief executive officer at Wealth Management Group in Inverness and Downers Grove. Craig, if couples don't talk about this ahead of time and then they do get hitched, seems like there's just all sorts of problems that can come.
Oh, we know time and time again, Cisco, that money is the number one divide between couples. And I think it's great that we're talking about it, given there's millions of couples that are about to get engaged on Friday, Valentine's Day. And I think the single biggest driving wedge happens to be differing views on debt, specifically consumer debt.
Yeah, so what sort of differing views might people have?
Well, I think, you know, we have to just recognize that in today's society, whether it was college that did it or whether it was the fact that everybody wants whatever they can have right now, you've got some 63% of relationships totally starting off in the red. And the issue with that is I think people just aren't on the same page, because a lot of this has to do with how we grew up. Some of us might be comfortable having debt. Others might really feel like it's akin to a financial hangover. And whenever we meet a couple in the office, the first thing we're doing is trying to understand their background and their comfort level with debt so we can have a pathway forward, because one is definitely going to be needed.
Now, we get mixed word on separate bank accounts, whether you should do that or not. What do you think?
Well, you know what? At the end of the day, you know, and earlier in the program, you had a guest on talking about what I call mine, yours, and ours, this new trend that's here. But I continue to subscribe to the idea professionally that separate bank accounts equal separate lives. Now, before somebody gets upset, there's nothing wrong with his account, her account, as long as there is that common denominator, that very innocent pronoun, our. Somewhere in the relationship, we need to be able to say our bank account. Somewhere we need to focus on our retirement, because if there's not that glue that binds us financially, it's just a bad ingredient, a terrible recipe. Financial intimacy is not going to get achieved.
So do you, when you have to have these conversations, do you do it at home, around the dining room table, the living room? Do you go out to a restaurant, you know, where there's maybe less chance of screaming at each other? I mean, when and where should you have these conversations?
Cisco, you are brilliant. In fact, I've got an idea for everybody right now. Do not dare do this on Valentine's Day, but I want you to take this opportunity to book a financial date night. So I want you and your partner, you and your best friend, to go out with a mission, which is not just to have a great meal, but I want you to go out with a mission where you start talking about your vision, because we have to have something to connect the couple. So each of you should be discussing some of your short, some of your long-term financial goals, and then from that meeting, start working towards those goals together. And again, you do that, there's going to be a much higher level of financial intimacy.
Yeah, and then at the end of it, you just have dessert no matter what, right? And then it's fine.
Oh, of course. Yeah. I mean, everyone has dessert.
Yeah, exactly. It makes the conversation easier. It makes every conversation easier. Thank you, Craig Bolanos, founding partner and chief executive officer at Wealth Management Group in Inverness and Downers Grove, joining us on Personal Finance Wednesday. This time tomorrow, Technology Thursday. Still to come, a metric seen as a precursor to the U.S. credit crisis is on the rise. Total household debt in the U.S. rose during the last quarter of 2019. Federal Reserve, the New York Federal Reserve, now pegs the total at $14 trillion. Let's talk about it. David Jones, chairman of DMJ Advisors, based in Denver, author of the book Understanding Central Banking. David, good to have you back on the show. So $14 trillion in debt, is this something we should be concerned about?
That's a very big number. It is something to be concerned about. That's the bad news. That, remember, is total mortgage debt and all other forms of household debt. That number jumped mainly because of mortgage debt. That's the bad news. The good news is that debt service, meaning the ability to essentially service that debt, pay it back, pay interest on the debt, is at an all-time low, mainly because interest rates are historically extremely low. So households can certainly handle it, but I'll give you a couple of numbers to raise at least a little bit of alarm. We had a credit crisis in 2007 and 2009. Household debt was the smoking gun of that crisis. It went from about 50% of GDP, which is a good way to measure it, in 1980 to 100% of GDP in just before the credit crisis. We're right now at about 75% of GDP. So it's nothing to panic over, but we do need to keep an eye on it.
Is this what happens when consumers feel more confident, better about the economy, better about their own income? They just, I guess, feel more secure in taking on more debt?
Exactly right. That's the environment right now, and it's because we have a solid economy. We have very good employment numbers, and consumers are very confident, and housing is doing quite well, again, with those low interest rates. So it's nothing to panic over by any means right now, but it's something to keep an eye on.
It's an interesting challenge, though, because if consumers say, hey, we're going to not take on any debt, we're going to get out of this, we're going to live a debt-free life, well, that's a lot of spending that is then pulled out of the economy.
Exactly. We need the bottom line here is we need to increase spending and debt together, but we do not want that ratio of debt to either GDP or income to get completely out of control. I would not view it as out of control at this point, but we do have to remember that in that credit crisis, it was out of control. So it's something to watch. But so far, we can just look at that household as in pretty good shape, whether you look at the debt ratio or income or job prospects. Things are pretty good.
Interested in your take, a separate subject, Jerome Powell, the Fed chairman, saying they may be willing to buy some more government debt if things get a little rough.
That's true. They have that so-called quantitative easing where the Fed, you know, really can create money out of thin air. I wish I could do that. But By buying that debt. What Powell wanted to say, and I think he's doing a good job at this point, is that we do have the ability to keep this economy on a sustainable growth track, and we do have the ability still to take care of a crisis or a recession. So things are in good shape right now.
Thank you. David Jones, chairman of DMJ Advisors. Always good info. If you missed any part of today's Noon Business Hour, the replay podcast will be available shortly at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Radio.com app.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.